Tennessee basketball picked up its third commit in the span of 8 days. That came on Friday. Who is it? What's everybody around the SEC saying about Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher? And what's Tennessee's place in all this mess? Monday show coming up now.
You are Locked On Vols, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everybody, happy Monday and welcome back into Locked On Vols, your team every single day. And of course, your team is the Tennessee Volunteers, your go-to Tennessee Volunteers podcast every weekday morning. It's right here, Locked On Vols. It's available on YouTube and wherever you find your podcast. I'm your host, Eric Kane. That's at underscore Kaner on Twitter and at Locked On Vols. Plenty to talk about. Tennessee football recruiting heating up. Big weekend ahead. Tennessee basketball, we'll get into that. Tennessee football as we head on towards the summer and the spring meetings. And looking forward to a lot here this week on the show. And don't forget, Twitter Tuesday tomorrow. Any questions, comments, concerns you may have, get them in there, underscore Kaner and at Locked On Vols. If you're new to the show, I do radio in Knoxville, Tennessee at 99.1 The Sports Animal. And I write for VolQuest.com. That's the Tennessee rival site, of course, covering Tennessee football and recruiting. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get into it. Chris Gordy coming up in segment two. This is Locked On Vols. DJ Jefferson is his name. He is Tennessee's third prep commit in the span of 8 days, of a week. That came on Friday, just before the weekend started. DJ Jefferson, he is a 2022 shooting guard. He's about 6'5", 190 pounds. Originally, he committed and signed with Tulsa back in the fall, but Tulsa's head coach had a parting of ways. Therefore, Askin was granted for his release and hit the open market. Tennessee was one of the first schools to contact him, and thus took an official visit to Tennessee very recently and made the call on Friday. It was last weekend he made an official visit to Tennessee, and then made the call to Tennessee on Friday. This is a scouting report from his head coach at Minnesota Preparatory Academy, and his name is Lucas Patterson. Quote, DJ came to us as a junior, and I didn't know a whole lot about him. I'd seen some video clips, but wasn't really sure what kind of player he was. Then after the first day we were in the gym, I knew he was going to be a high major prospect. He's just so athletic, the most athletic guy that we've had in our program. He's improved so much in all areas in just 2 years that we've had him. He's played out of position as a freshman and sophomore, playing the four. We moved him out on the perimeter as a combo guard three-man, and he's just flourished. He's improved his skill set on offense, and where he's really grown in the past year is as a defender, figuring out how to use his athleticism to defend in space. He's a great kid, and I mean this, the sky is the limit for him. Again, that's end quote. That is from Lucas Patterson, the head coach of Minnesota Preparatory Academy. That is where he attends school right now. And this is good for Tennessee. It gives them additional depth in the backcourt. You look at that 2022 signing class for the Volunteers now, and it is Julian Phillips, Toby Awaka, DJ Jefferson, of course, BJ Edwards. Tennessee also brought in Tyreek Key via the transfer portal. So the backcourt is loaded in terms of, you know, even when you lost Justin Powell, even when you lost Quentin Dibunje, you return Santiago Vescovi, you return Josiah Jordan-James, who officially made the announcement that he's going to withdraw his name from the 2022 NBA draft and come back. You knew that was going to be a thing once he did not get the invite to the NBA Combine. So, of course, you bring back a first-team All-SEC guard in Santiago Vescovi and a guy in Josiah Jordan-James that should have been on one of the teams for sure. And, you know, you bring in B.J. Edwards, Akai Ziegler, and you've got all these different options, Tyreek Key and whatnot. So, you know, D.J. Jefferson's most likely going to be a developmental player, a guy that can sit back, watch, learn, bide his time. And once you lose James, once you lose Vescovi, you have a guy like Jeremiah Mashak, and D.J. Jefferson who can step in and potentially eat up a whole lot of minutes the following basketball season. So what's this mean for Tennessee? Well, three commits from the prep level in the last 8 days. That means Tennessee has one spot still available for its roster this upcoming season. The Volunteers still very much looking to bring in a transfer. We've been talking about the name Tyrese Hunter of Iowa State, who entered the transfer portal. He's taken an official visit to Tennessee, as well as, I believe, Gonzaga and Texas and Purdue and a couple of other ones. Kansas, I think he wrapped up his visit to Kansas just this past weekend. So he'll be announcing at some point. My opinion, Tennessee's probably on the outside looking in because they got that first official visit weeks ago, and so It's kind of like, what have you done for me lately? But we'll have to see. He'll probably announce at some point soon, but I'll personally, just me, I would be surprised if Tennessee was that guy. But nonetheless, Tennessee's still looking for a point guard. If they can't get a point guard, potentially looking to bring in another big man, because Brendan Huntley Hatfield did go to Louisville and transferred out of the program. So that's kind of, you know, what's happening there. But Rob Lewis, VolQuest.com, one of my guys that I work with over at VolQuest, did a nice job catching up with DJ Jefferson. He wrote a story. You can read that and an impact analysis and all that. But here are some quotes from the story when Rob Lewis caught up with DJ Jefferson. It's really because Coach Barnes, just the history. He's got a lot of history under his belt, and I feel like I wanted to come here and learn from him and, you know, just about myself and about being a Tennessee Volunteer. I'm not from here, but just based on how they treated me when I first got here on my visit, they treated me like family. I didn't feel like a stranger or anything like that. To be honest, I can't wait to get here. When I told them that I was committing here at the restaurant and everybody was done eating, and everybody was super happy. They just made me feel even more at home. When I told them I was coming, everybody was smiling. They were all ears. When they heard me, they were just like, oh, are you for real? I was going to wait until I got back home, but then I thought it would be better to tell them while I was here. So he goes on, a couple more quotes here from DJ Jefferson at VolQuest.com. When I was first here and throughout my entire visit, the campus tour, seeing the strength and conditioning, coach, things like that, my mind was just like, I want to commit to here right now. He goes on to say, they like my athleticism for sure. They think I bring a lot to the table. They feel like I can get in any spot on the floor. I'm versatile, and I feel like I have great defensive skills. So a guy that's out on the perimeter, end quote, a guy that's out on the perimeter, a guy that's really a two, a shooting guard, but can play the three a little bit, got good size, 6'5", 190, and he will be a developmental piece. So again, Tennessee gets another commit from DJ Jefferson, adding him to the basketball cupboard, adding him with Toby Awaka and Julian Phillips. Julian Phillips, of course, the five-star, along with BJ Edwards from the prep class. And then, of course, Tyreek Key also came in a part of this class as well via the transfer portal. So, add that with Josiah Jordan James coming back, officially withdrawing his name from the NBA draft. Santiago Vescovi is going to come back. Tennessee will be in position, as it always is, to compete with the likes of the SEC, the top tier of the SEC, and we'll have to see how this team gels together if they want to, you know, riddle themselves of some postseason woes. Of course, you know, the tournament woes that have kind of riddled Rick Barnes here of late. But that's good news for Tennessee, and we'll continue on as this roster continues to fill out, and we'll let you know what it looks like when we hear from Tyrese Hunter if he decides to choose the Volunteers over the likes of some of those other schools. So that's what's the latest happening in Tennessee basketball right now. Don't forget Twitter Tuesdays coming up. Get me in your comments, your questions, your concerns at _Caner and at Locked On Vols. Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC, caught up with him on Sunday afternoon. Ask him what he thought about Jimbo Fisher, what he thought about Nick Saban, what's Tennessee's role in all this, a little Tennessee baseball. That's what you have coming at you here in segment number two of Locked On Vols. But first, I want to remind you guys about Built Bars, the Built Bar Brownie Batter. It is fantastic. It tastes so good, and it's filled with protein. It's taking it to a whole new level. They're available now at Built.com. You need to check them out. If you haven't tried the Built Bar Puffs yet, I'm not sure what you're waiting on. Puffs are chocolate-covered marshmallow protein bars, delicious flavor marshmallow covered in 100% real chocolate, only 140 calories, but 17 grams of protein, 7 grams of sugar. Brownie batter puffs are the perfect pick-me-up for any single day. They're made with protein your body absorbs more efficiently, provides tons of health benefits, and the brownie batter puffs will have you completely forgetting that you're eating a protein bar to make you feel like you're eating literally brownie batter, you know, that type of mix. So no need to pinch yourself. This is real life. Go to Built.com right now and check out those brownie batter puffs. Again, that's Built.com. While you're there, put in the promo code LOCK15. You're going to get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off. That's all at Built.com. And I want to tell you about my friends at rockauto.com. The ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain of auto parts store to stock up on all the parts that you need. So why endure the often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning that comes from the person behind the counter that's waiting to take your order, checking their computer for the brands and specifications that only their warehouse happens to carry? You have access to computers right in the palm of your hand. Go to rockauto.com and check it out for yourself. Don't choose to spend up to 30 to 50, sometimes even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership when you can get them for much less at rockauto.com. It's a family-owned business serving it to do-it-yourselfers and professionals for over 20 years online, and the prices are always so reliably low. Go there today and explore their easy-to-use website. Find the solution to all of your auto part needs. Go to rockauto.com and see all the parts available for your car and your truck. Write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit my friends at rockauto.com. Welcome back into Locked On Vols, your team every single day. And now we're joined by Chris Gordy. Locked On SEC does a fantastic job. You hear me at the end of every episode saying, hey, give Locked On SEC your second listen. So I want to bring Chris on, and boy, oh boy, the cinema at the end of last week started with a shot heard around the world Wednesday night with Nick Saban when he says that Texas A&M bought every single player in the 2022 recruiting class. We've heard Lane Kiffin get over it. Deion Sanders has jumped in on it. Of course, Jimbo Fisher called his own press conference at 11 a.m. the day after. What's your take on this whole situation? Because Jimbo had a whole lot to say, and I think it took the college football world by shock, to be completely honest.
Yeah, I thought Saban seemed a little frazzled for the first time in his career. For the first time, Nick Saban was shook, as the kids would say. You know, him citing examples of, hey, look at what the A&M's doing. And I thought, you know, he could have done this, phrased this better. He knew there were cameras in there. AL.com literally put up the entire video in HD and mic'd up on their YouTube page 30 minutes after this thing happened. So he knew this thing was going to get out. I just think he should have been a little bit more careful. He could have talked in generalities. He could have said, there's programs out there that are paying recruits, and that's not what NIL was supposed to be intended for. Him saying A&M not just paid some recruits, but paid their entire recruiting class. It's like, that's just taking it to another level. And so, yeah, he had to think that Jimbo was going to respond. Now, I thought Jimbo took it a step further. Jimbo hit below the belt. Jimbo was like, oh, you want to know where the bodies are buried? This guy's been doing stuff like this for years. Like, okay, Jimbo, like, if you want to call him out, you worked on that staff. You know specifics. Why don't you call him out on specifics of dirty things he's done throughout the past? Instead, he went vague. But look, as fans of the SEC, it's great. It's great theater. It gives us something to talk about in otherwise dead time in sports. But that said, it has sparked a lot more conversation on what NIL is, what it was intended to be, and what it is. I mean, like, you know, I've come around on it a little bit. I was very critical early on saying NIL's name, image, and likeness. This is for the Johnny Manziels, the Tim Tebows, the Tyrann Mathews, guys who blow up that are bigger than the sport, to be able to go sign autographs at a car dealership, to get a car from a dealer and not have to do it under the table, hush, hush, hey, wink, wink, I'm going to leave the keys under your doormat. You know, they can do it out in the open now, and that's awesome. You know, a gymnastics team could go sit at a local grocery store and sign autographs for little kids and get paid to do it. That's awesome. That's what NIL is intended for. I think the biggest problem I had is NIL was not specifically intended for recruits and to be able to go buy recruits. That said, if booster clubs want to do this and collectives, as we're calling them, want to do it, I think we can't stand in the way. We got to let it happen and then let the repercussions happen afterwards. You're going to have recruits or big money boosters who paid for a recruit that doesn't pan out. Five stars bust every year. They don't all hit. So you look at A&M specifically. They've got multiple five-star DBs in this class. Damani Richardson, the big-time safety, decides to come back another year. Guess what? One of those DBs isn't going to play this year at A&M. What's going to happen? Does he sit around and wait his turn, or does he hit the transfer portal? There's going to be all kinds of repercussions that fall out from this NIL thing, and at least it's got the discussion going a little bit more. But again, I think, like I said, I've come around a little bit on it. I think a lot of SEC fan bases now are saying, look, stop pointing the finger at A&M going, you guys might have done something wrong here, but point the finger yourself and go, all right, how much more money can I give to my school so we can get in on this and start getting some recruits? Because that's what it is. I've even thought maybe you put a restriction and say you can't sign an NIL deal until you get on campus and you're a student. But even then, you're just going to have verbal agreements with kids and go, yeah, sign here. Once you get on campus on September 1st, you'll have an NIL deal. So I don't think there's any way to police it. And then on the flip side, you have Arch Manning, who has created a big name for himself. He should be able to sign an NIL deal from day one because he has a name, image, and likeness already. So it's hard to police. And so I say, let's go, let's dive in head first, and let's keep going.
Yeah, so, I mean, do you – the NCAA thinks this is out of control. They spend millions and millions and millions of dollars fighting this in courts and have come up unsuccessful. I mean, do you see – what more can the NCAA do? Because they've had decades – this has been my point of emphasis this entire discussion is, you know, they've had chances to outline this, to actually put up restrictor plates and say, this is good, this is bad. This is what happens if you break the rules. You know, to paint a picture here. And they didn't. They didn't whatsoever. Once the court ruled in favor, you know, against them last summer and they said, okay, here it's the finally time, they just said go with it. And so the NCAA can't do anything, in my opinion. What say you? Do you see – and they came out a couple weeks ago and said, hey, just a reminder, here are our rules. Didn't really do anything. We're going to retroactively start punishing teams. No, you're not. What's going to happen here? I mean, is this going to slow down? What's the future of name, image, and likeness here in the next year or so?
Well, I think you did the great graphic a few weeks ago of the toothpaste is out of the tube. You literally cannot put it back in. Yeah, you're right. I think that the easiest thing, at least the first step in policing this and what they can do, is limit the transfer portal window. Say from this date to this date, the transfer portal is closed. You know, I've had some people say, well, what's wrong with kids going wherever they want? The coaches can leave anytime they want. Look, unless you're Bobby Petrino, the coaches aren't leaving in October. They're sticking around. There's a window that the coaches leave one job to go to the next. Make a window where the players, you can't leave, you know, between this date and this date. I think that'll limit it a little bit. You know, we look at the kid who just left Pitt, who went to USC, and there's all reports that, you know, best wide receiver in the country, Biletnikoff winner, Jordan Addison, there's all these reports out there that he had an NIL deal at USC, and people are going, oh, this isn't fair, whatever. I point the finger at Pitt and their fan base and go, you guys should have stepped up to the plate, paid this kid money, and he would have stayed. I think there's reports out there that Kayshon Boutte at LSU was ready to leave after Coach O was fired. He was heading to possibly Alabama, were the reports. A local attorney in Baton Rouge said, let's get this kid on an NIL deal, signed to an NIL deal. He's got a new car. He's looking good. He stayed at LSU. I think it's now, this is the rules that we're playing by now. You want to keep a kid, sign him to an NIL deal. And look, it's not just paying the kid to stay. It's giving the kid a better opportunity. Hey, I'm going to like it here a lot more if I get to stay here where I'm already happy and I like playing here and I can make a little money. We're not talking millions of dollars. We're talking with a lot of these kids, NIL deals, $40,000, $50,000. But Eric, when you and I were in college, that was life-changing money for us. I mean, I'm scrounging under the couch to find money to go eat Pluckers. That's what I was doing in college. So, these kids, look, it's awesome that this is happening. And again, the floodgates are open, but I think the first step the NCAA can do in doing this is limit the transfer portal window. That will at least allow kids who aren't happy somewhere, or at least give them a little downtime to cool out, and give that school an opportunity to say, hey, what kind of NIL deal can we give you to keep you happy here? Let's make it work for everybody.
Yep, I couldn't agree more, and I think that would be a good idea to try to limit that window. You've seen it a little bit here lately, but even more moving forward. And so name, image, and likeness, it'll be a conversation at the spring meetings as a bunch of other conversations, divisions of the SEC, SEC title games. That's what we had to look forward to. But Jimbo and Nick Saban getting in the same room, we can't wait for that. Last thing, Chris. Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC, does an awesome job. We get your thoughts out the door on the Tennessee baseball team. Playing in Hoover this week, the number one overall seed, of course, the top team in the country for the majority of the season, breaking records left and right. This seems like, in my opinion, I don't want to say Omaha, or I don't want to say College World Series title or bust, because you still had a great year. But I do believe you've got to get to Omaha or it's going to be a massive disappointment. And once you get to Omaha, anything can happen, right? Those other teams are there for a reason, too. You're entering a new phase of the season. This is the postseason, and everyone's good that you're going to be playing. But this Tennessee baseball team, to me, feels as well-equipped as anybody to go the long haul and bring it all home once it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think we know what the offense could do, right? I think it all comes down to the pitching. And largely, Tennessee has had great pitching much of this year, and, you know, can they continue to get that throughout the postseason is going to be the biggest question. And how do you particularly throughout the SEC tournament, and then when you get into those regionals, it's always tough when you're facing that four seed. We're either one seed, you're facing that four seed, and you say, all right, well, let's save Drew Beam or Dolander, or, you know, who can we throw out in that first game, but then save our big horses for later in the regional. The same thing with the super regional, where how do you balance it out? You know, do you burn all your best guys early? So I think how they manage this will be very interesting. But look, it's Omaha or bust for this team. You don't have one of the most historic best seasons in Vol history to go out and lose in a regional or super regional. And we've seen it. I mean, we just saw it this past weekend with softball. You know, some SEC teams that were hosting and getting, you know, getting ousted, teams that were favorites and getting ousted early. So, yeah, I would say the pitching is the big thing. How do they manage the pitching throughout the regional and then once you get to Omaha? But, again, I love what I've seen from this pitching staff as a whole throughout the season. They've answered the call, and you expect the bats are going to give them the run support. So, I don't know if they're going to have many football scores like they had against Mississippi State, but, you know, I think the pitching is key, and that's what I've been so surprised about. When you look up and down the ERAs of this pitching staff and just – I see nothing but ones and twos. I mean, it's phenomenal what they've been able to do, and that is the biggest reason. I know the offense and the home runs get all the headlines, but the pitching staff, I think, was what shocked most of us this year and how good they were, especially with the injuries you had coming into the season.
So the downloads, the impressions, the ratings, they're going to soar on Wednesday's show when I join you on Locked On SEC. But what else do you have in store this week on the show?
Yeah, we're trying to put together, trying to balance travel plans and all this. So we actually may revisit a couple of our conversations from SEC Media Days last year that I feel like we didn't even get to play a full interview that we have with Peter Burns and with a lot of the guys that we had throughout SEC Media Days. So we'll revisit a little bit of that. And also, I was digging through the archives, and I found an interview I did with Billy Napier when he was the head coach at Louisiana a few years ago. So I said, you know what, let's revisit that for our Florida fan base to kind of hear a little bit of Napier from a few years ago versus where he is now taking over as head coach of Florida. So we'll have that, and then the next couple of weeks we'll really start getting ramped up into a little bit deeper football conversation as, summer ball is about to be here before we know it, and SEC Media Days, and we will be counting down the days until that first kickoff.
Big thanks there from Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC. He does a fantastic job. So as I always do at the end of the show, your first listen's Locked On Vols. Make it your second listen. That's Locked On SEC with Chris Gordy. Hey, the biggest stories of the day, plus instant reactions, big game pictures, and the take of the day. That's the Locked On Sports Today podcast. You can make that your second or third listen as well. It's available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. All right, Tennessee baseball. So, well, another season or a season-ending sweep for the regular season, but another series sweep of the season for the University of Tennessee. They just keep coming and coming in bunches. The Volunteers finished the regular season 49-7, 25-5 in the SEC. Tennessee wraps up the SEC East, already finished it with 3 weekends to go in terms of clinching the SEC East with a 10-game lead. So Tennessee was 10 games better than any other team in the SEC East this season. Florida actually came on and finished second place, 15-15 in the conference. Actually tied Georgia 15-15 in the conference. And Tennessee, of course, 25-5. Tennessee finishes 6 games better than Texas A&M that surpassed Arkansas in the final regular season weekend and finished with 19-11 inside conference. So Tennessee finishes 6 games better than the first place team in the West, Texas A&M, at 19-11. That means University of Tennessee won the SEC by 6 games, won the SEC East by 10 games. That is truly, truly remarkable. Just look at these eye-popping stats here. Tennessee 34-3 at home, 13-2 on the road overall, 49-7, like I said, and made quick work of Mississippi State over the weekend, sweeping in fashion. Now, it was another record-setting day for the University of Tennessee on Thursday night, the final Thursday, Friday, Saturday weekend of the season for the Volunteers. They had 3 straight to end the regular season. 27-2 was the final score. Yes, 27-2 was the final score. Tennessee over Mississippi State in game one on Thursday night. That's the night when Chase Dolander got to the mound and started the game. He pitched 6 hitless innings. Again, 6 hitless innings. 67 pitches, 6 hitless innings, and a 27-2 rout. I don't know about you, but if I'm a starting pitcher, I want to keep on going, right? But again, bigger picture here, you've got Hoover coming up. You've got hopefully regionals and supers in Omaha. That's all on the docket. So there's no point running back out there when, you know, at the 6th inning, Tennessee was leading. Let's see here. Let's see. 6, 11, 14. It was 14-0 when Chase Dolander left the ballgame. 27-2, the final score. That's the largest loss in Mississippi State history, the largest loss by any SEC team in the last 25 years. That being the 27-2 loss Tennessee handed to Mississippi State. By the way, the reigning national champions. Most runs by an SEC team in conference games since 1998. 7 home runs in that ball game ties a UT single game record. That's the third time it's tied this season. And it was just incredible for the University of Tennessee. 27 runs on 25 hits. Chase Dolander held Mississippi State hitless in 6 innings pitched. Goodness gracious, what a night on Thursday night for the University of Tennessee. And the Volunteers up and down the lineup. I mean, obviously, you empty the bench. Tennessee had multi-RBI gains from Seth Stevenson, from Luke Lipsius, from, let's see here, Logan Seamstra. You had 8 runs driven in. Yes, 8 runs driven in on a 5-for-7 day at the plate. 4 runs scored, 8 runs driven in from Jarrell Ortega. You had 3 runs driven in from Evan Russell, so quite the day on Thursday night. It was the complete opposite, for the University of Tennessee on a Friday night. You had Tennessee leading, or trailing rather, 1-0 through 4 innings. Tennessee tied it at 1 run apiece in the top of the 5th, and then Mississippi State tacked on 2 in the bottom of the 7th to take a 3-1 lead. Tennessee responded by scoring 3 in the top of the 8th to take a 4-3 lead and able to pitch 2 scoreless frames in the 8th and 9th to hold on for the 4-3 win. Blake Tidwell came on to relieve Chase Burns, 3 innings pitched, 5 strikeouts, no walks on 42 pitches. Chase Burns went 6 innings, 3 runs off 8 hits, 6 strikeouts and no walks. The pitching was really, really good this weekend, so that was fantastic. Drew Gilbert had the decisive 2-run home run in the 8th inning. And then I believe Jordan Beck drove in a run in that inning as well. So Tennessee was on fire on Saturday, or on Friday as well. And then Saturday for game 3 of the series, Tennessee took a big lead early on. Actually fell behind 1-0 before taking a 3-1 lead in the second. We're leading 3-2 heading to the third. Tacked on 2 more runs, 5-2. Then Tennessee scored a run in the fourth, a run in the fifth, 3 in the sixth. And Tennessee was able to cruise to a 10-5 victory on Saturday. And Drew Beam actually got the start. Remember, he got his start skipped last weekend, trying to get him some rest heading into the weekend. He allowed 2 runs off 3 hits in 2 innings pitched. But Ben Joyce came in and threw some. Kirby Connell came in and threw some. Cameron Sewell came in and threw. He had some tough luck. Back-to-back-to-back singles, actually, off Cam Sewell was able to drive in a couple of runs. Will Mabry came in and got him out of that jam. And then Redmond Walsh came in as well. Evan Russell also on the weekend tied the career hit mark for the Tennessee baseball program with Todd Helton, so that was good to see. So 10-5 the winner on Saturday for the University of Tennessee to finish off the weekend sweep. And then that takes us to the SEC tournament, which begins in Hoover this weekend. So what we know, as we kind of wrap up our baseball conversation, Tennessee will start on Wednesday. It'll be the third game on Wednesday. The number one seed, Tennessee, will take on the winner of game 3, which, wait for it, Tuesday night, the 8th-seeded Vanderbilt Commodores will take on the 9th-seeded Ole Miss Rebels. Remember, Vanderbilt and Ole Miss, two of the best programs historically in the SEC, especially Vanderbilt, rather, very much down years this year. Still got a lot of talent, still got loads of talent. Those two teams will play each other to take on Tennessee. So on Tuesday, it is single elimination. So Vanderbilt and Ole Miss will play each other. Whoever loses that game is done. The winner will move on to play Tennessee on Wednesday, and that's the double elimination round. So Tennessee will play on Wednesday at 4:30. They'll be running behind, so I would shoot for about 5 or 5:30, to be completely honest with you. And that's when Tennessee will get started in Hoover. And the way that the pitching kind of shaped up, Tennessee hasn't released anything. I would expect Blake Tidwell to get the start on Wednesday for the University of Tennessee. Remember, he came on and pitched Friday. He pitched 3 innings, only 42 pitches. He will be well-rested, ready to roll. I bet Blake Tidwell will get the nod on Wednesday. And then, of course, will it be Chase Burns, Chase Dolander, Drew Beam? You got 4 starting pitchers for potentially 5 games. Tennessee's in good shape. Tennessee is very much in good shape. They will all pitch. So the way the SEC tournament works in Hoover, it's a little bit weird. Remember, day 1 on Tuesday, a single elimination. Days 2, 3, and 4, double elimination. So Tennessee will enter the Tennessee starts in the double elimination round on Wednesday, and then they will play on on Thursday and or Friday and then move on. Then it gets back into single elimination on Saturday. Saturday single elimination, and then Sunday the championship game is single elimination as well. So Tennessee is positioned as good as anybody to win the SEC tournament in Hoover, but let's not forget that is not the end goal. It's awesome. It's fun. Tennessee won the SEC tournament in basketball in Tampa this year, and then obviously you saw what happened. So we'll have to track and see exactly what's going on with Tennessee baseball this week, but plenty of coverage at VolQuest.com. So don't forget, too, as well, we'll be talking this as the week goes on, a massive, massive recruiting weekend coming up this weekend, Memorial Day weekend, the Memorial Day premiere event. If you are a prospect that Tennessee is interested on in the 2023s, maybe a couple of 2024s, but mostly 2023s, you will be on campus if you can make it. This is going to be huge, and I'll be there, and I'll tell you all the ins and the outs after that event as well. So that's going to do it here for a Monday show. More of a news type of show. We talked with Chris Gordy as well, got his thoughts on Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. So fun show here, and we'll get into your Twitter Tuesday questions and all that and more coming up on tomorrow's show. Dive in those DMs at _Caner and at LockedOnVols. Guys, thanks so much. Your go-to Tennessee Volunteers podcast, weekday mornings on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. Thank you for making this podcast what it is, and we will talk again tomorrow. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Monday, everybody.